This episode, some of our Banking with Life clients discuss their exposure to the idea that they could control the banking function with the infinite banking concept and practical experience in becoming your own banker, as taught by my late friend and mentor, R. Nelson Nash. Now, these are unscripted and in their own words, so they may not use precise language, but they took time out of their busy lives and their full schedules to come and share with you. And I thought it was very powerful. They were very complimentary of us as a team, the Banking with Life team and some of the team members, you know, Jake, Julie, Service. And I do truly appreciate that. But those were also unsolicited. I really had fun with all of these individuals, and I think that you'll enjoy. Thank you for listening.
I felt a little lost, a little bit confused by the noise. I sent you an email where I basically said that I want to do this the way the book wants you to do it, the way the book teaches you to do it, right? Because you're the only one that's not saying, here are the numbers, right? How much do you want to spend? Here you go, right? Your videos are getting way more deeper into that, to the concepts and the tenets of that. You know, you even say, yeah, you could do that, but you're not following, you're not becoming your own bank. You're giving up the banking function. You're taking on risk. You're taking the risk from the insurance company, putting it on yourself. It's like, yeah, those are the things I kind of was like, there was a foggy idea. And then watching your videos, you kind of clarify, yeah, that's what I was thinking. That's exactly the question I was trying to ask. And not only are you making the question clear, but you're providing an answer, at least guidance. And so I told you, I want to talk to you about doing basically this the right way, the way the book teaches you. And that's when we had a few follow-up meetings. And between the time I sent out that email and the time you responded and set up another meeting, I kept watching as many videos as I could, right? And I pick up little tidbits here and there that kind of stick to me. And one of them was like, we're not here to print out illustrations for you, right? We got to make sure you know. And it's like, okay, I get it now. I understand it now, because all those illustrations did was kind of skew the correct path, right? They're kind of leading me a little, they're causing me to focus on the wrong thing. And it was perfect for me because I'm a numbers guy and you're showing me numbers. This is great. This, you're talking my language. And I was like following that path and I was being led a little bit astray, right? And so, you know, after talking to you, I got a better feeling about doing this, right? I was very confident when I called you the first time, and then all the noise, I kind of lost that confidence. But then after talking to you, you know, the second round of conversations, I started to feel, okay, I understand now, right? The more I watch your videos, the more conversations and emails we have, the better I feel about it, right? And ultimately, when I decided to actually, you know, like you said, the rubber hits the road once you get to write a premium check, right? When I was at the stage where I was ready to do that, I was clear I wanted to work with you, right? Because of the conversations you had, because you dug deep and made sure that not only you understood the type of client I would be, but you made sure that I had a better understanding and what I was trying. You actually caused me to step back and think, okay, I am not interested in doing this for this reason. There are all these other reasons that are more important to me, and this stuff doesn't really matter. If you focus on what your goals really are, mm-hmm. Here's how this can help you accomplish this. Mm-hmm. This policy should not be your goal, right? This should be a tool that helps you accomplish goals, yeah, if possible, and things like that. And that was a very hard thing for me to do, because I am a numbers guy. I am a programmer. I don't go by service, right? When I compare two things, if you can get me the same thing for the same price or lower price, I'm going there.
Sure.
Right? I don't put a lot of thought into service mostly. I mean, there are a few examples of where it made sense, and I learned to appreciate it later in life, you know. And now I'll even pay a little more for better service.
The older we get, some things matter more than others.
It started steamrolling on us because when we would buy that and we're capturing that the interest rate, that gave us more cash to buy the next note with. Yeah. And so it very quickly got to where we turned around and we didn't know anything.
I started to say the reason I was able to get past the life insurance part of it was because I could see that if we could pay off the rental properties with the life insurance money, and I calculated how much interest we'd save by doing that and paying it off in a short period of time, that's really what got me over the hump of buying life insurance.
Yeah. So looking beyond the rate that the mortgage lenders are charging and looking at the volume of interest you would have paid over those notes, right, that's really what the opportunity is to redirect. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and of course, we pay interest to the life insurance companies when we borrow their money collateralized by our cash value.
But it was amazing to me in 4 years how we were going from a lot of debt to, I think, in 4 years, we had all of our debt paid off.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I mean, that's like 3 rental properties, our primary residence, 2 automobiles. Mm-hmm. It just was amazing how that could snowball and pay all that debt off. And of course, as a female, we all liked our security, and a lot of our security is wrapped up in not having debt. So that's for females, I think it's a very emotional thing about not having debt.
Yeah. I think it's emotional, you know, when you talk about money and we talk about your money, you know, it gets real pretty quick, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so I think I don't know if you had said it or maybe you, one of y'all, it seems that I recall like closing down the 401ks and the qualified plans and taking that hit, which is ordinary income tax at the year, in the year of distribution, plus a 10% penalty if you're, you know, under 59 and a half years of age.
Which we were.
Yeah, we didn't have the penalty, but we did have.
That's right,
we didn't have the penalty, but yes, we had to pay the.
I do want to make a side note that you should not do that without, you know, seeking proper advice from the appropriate financial professional that you work with. Okay. So I'm not saying you should do it or shouldn't do it. I'm just saying you shouldn't do it without the appropriate financial advice, which we are not giving. We're not giving financial advice. We're having a lovely conversation with friends and their clients, but this is not meant to give financial advice. We're just allowing you to listen in if you choose to. But I think one of you had mentioned that when you compare the interest you would have paid by not paying off those mortgages, or even paying them off sooner, the interest you were paying for the mortgages, and compared that to the taxes that was paid in that given year, and it kind of lessened or made that thought process more gentle, or... You know,
I didn't have any issue with it from the very beginning.
Okay.
Because I'm a researcher. You know, I study stuff and I don't just jump out there and, you know, I didn't do this on a 10-minute whim.
Right.
You know, and so,
you didn't watch a TikTok video and make a decision?
No. So it was obvious to me that if you do A, B, and C, that D is going to happen. Okay. Now, I think the biggest thing, and I've told lots of friends about this program, but what I always tell them is if you're not a disciplined person, don't do this. Because it takes discipline, knowing that, okay, we've just taken money out of an insurance policy, and we've gone and we've bought the note on this house or car or whatever. If you don't continue making those payments as you should have been, that you would have been had you not bought it off, then your program's going to fail. Your overall program is going to fail. So you have to be disciplined in order to every month make those payments, but you're making them to yourself. And so It's easier to do that when you're making it to yourself. And I think the biggest light that went on with her was when there was an analogy made about, you know, if you own your home and you're going to move every 7 to 10 years and you're going to get an interest rate of, you know, 3% whatever on a home with a front-loaded note during that 7 or 10 years, how much interest rate did you really pay? You know, you're paying 3%, but if your house payment's $1,500 and $1,400 of it's interest, you're paying a whole lot more than 3%.
And, that's right. The volume.
Oh, it was 90, shocking.
90-something percent by volume. No, yeah. They don't care what the rate is.
And as a real estate person at that time, she said, repeat that, and I want to make sure. And she started taking notes. I want to make sure I understood that. And she walked away shocked that night as to how much interest you're actually paying. Well, if you'll take that and move it over into vehicles that you have, or a boat, or if you financed, you know, some work to be done on your house, or anything that you, a credit card, anything that you're doing which you're paying interest on, you can capture every penny of that interest, and it doesn't cost you any more a month than what it's costing you now.
Yeah.
But your bank, quote unquote, I know you got to be careful using that because we're not really a bank, but it grows exponentially.
Yeah. Yeah, we're buying life insurance, not, you know, bank. Right. Banking, you know, banking is, and I like to say it's the oldest profession in the world because, you know, it is. So, I mean, it's just a movement of money, mm-hmm. banking, deposits, withdrawals, you know, checks, loans, repayments. And I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, the volume of interest is so much different than the rate, and everybody is taught and trained to focus on the rate, mm-hmm. and it's the volume. How has your experience been with the life insurance company?
Oh, it's great. No problems at all. And it is relatively easy to take loans and to work with them directly. I had no problems with that. And setting up monthly payments and all that, I kind of handled it all on my own. So the issue I had was I didn't know how to, like, should I go in with PUAs and how much and when. That's the kind of coaching I was looking to get, and that wasn't there early on
So some policy. Of the finer details or nuances of cash flows and policy. All right. Okay, so you were orphaned, and then you're assigned to somebody in California. They didn't really return your call.
Yes.
And so you just kept calling out other agents or advisors.
Yeah, I called other advisors to see what should I do with this? You know, do I need to read, you know, change it or whatever? And never felt comfortable with any of the recommendations.
Okay. And so, go ahead.
So I guess if we want to event the up to year 10, well, my term rider was coming off.
Okay, but did you do any financing though? Did you do any financing?
I did a lot of financing.
Okay, so you were using it without the coach and getting it done directly with the life insurance company.
Yep.
But you're still really more or less orphaned. You didn't have a coach, and you didn't get, you know, really satisfaction in trying to engage with other agents. And then so now let's. You know, but you were successfully banking with your policy.
Yes, I was banking. No problems. I took out close to six figures, and I paid back probably half of that. All you know, so I've been using it the whole time.
So you're doing it.
Yes. Yep. Yep. We did anything from putting. We sold our old home. We moved. We moved to a new location, and we had to put windows, floors, hardwood floors, interior doors. We gutted the bathrooms. Septic tank failed, so we need another $10,000 to put in a new septic system. So that was all. If I didn't have the capital, I wouldn't have been able to do it and make the move to where we're at today.
That's awesome. All right, so let's. You knew, so your policy had a 10-year term rider on it, and maybe you will just take it from there. You knew that something needed to happen, I guess.
Yeah, I I wanted a second policy. So I wanted to convert this term and develop another bank and, you know, grow this system so I can fund the additional system. I heard, I watched your podcast with Paul Cleveland, and he talked about how he got several policies. So I knew what I wanted. And so I went and talked to the agent that I was assigned to out in California, and didn't feel comfortable. One of the things is he wasn't with Nelson Nash. So that's one of my big hangups with him. And then, then the other thing I did is I went back to the friend who introduced me to it, and he and went and met with his financial advisor. Okay. But when I met with her, she recommended that this wasn't the right time for me. I should cancel the fund, cancel the policy, sure. Get back into term, and then max out my 401k. And
10 years into it,
and I'm like, she saw the outstanding loan balance, and she's looking at eliminating all the loans, but the loans is, I manage it. I'm the banker. I can do whatever I want. I can pay back. I can pay interest only. You know, I can manage that.
Yeah,
whatever situation I'm in at the time, right? So
if you think about that, Bill, look, the loan is an asset to the bank, right? A deposit to a bank is a liability, right?
Correct.
So,
yep.
You know, she's, and it's very common for, you know, advisors to look at outstanding loans on policies as just bad debt or debt that needs to be eliminated, you know, because they haven't been trained. I don't care what kind of designation you have in the financial world. You have not been trained in the nuance or the power of dividend paying whole life insurance and the ability to pay high premium, right? And to have access to that capital, that banking, the idea of banking, becoming your own banker, solving your need for the banking function in your life is not taught anywhere in the financial world. So she's doing, or she, I would assume, it'd be a fair guess, or, you know, she's just doing what she has been trained to do and what she believes is right. You know, the market's always going to go up by term and invest the difference, you know, concept. So, okay.
Yeah, she wanted to give me a high-level convertible term policy. And then I'm like, if I get back into the market and I start doing it the way I didn't want to do 10 years ago, when will I ever be able to convert the term to whole life when all my money's shifting into the market? And I didn't want to go back to what, and you know, lose that capital that I invested in this policy.
So after that hour and a half meeting, you knew that wasn't a good fit, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't the right for me. So I still was left searching, and I listened to your podcast all the time, and others that are out there, but listen to you, and Paul Cleveland was on there talking about creating additional policies. Your one on, your wife was on, Jenna, is that right?
Jenna,
and that kind of convinced me, because you're talking about funding policies and not knowing where the money's coming from, but making it work, and that really was the selling point that I had to pick up the phone and call you. And that's when I reached out to you. I had, I think I had, 2 months to convert the term before it expired?
It was a short time period.
So I put you to work, and I appreciate it. You got it done. And I got my second policy.
All right.
Started in real estate investing in the early 2000s, and I'd started going to some meetups in Dallas. There weren't called meetups then. Yeah. It was just once a month meeting, you know, for a real estate investor group. And so I ran across a gal there called Jackie Lang, and I also ran across her mentor, Jack Miller.
Yeah.
So
he's no longer with us, Jack Miller's.
And man, I still got all his old tapes. I love hearing him talk, and I need to start re-listening to his stuff. But Jackie started doing, she didn't call it a podcast, it was just an audio interview, and I would download those when I was driving back and forth to work and listen to them. And one of those was you and
Eb
on talking about the infinite banking concept and Nelson Nash. And I remember listening to it. It was like an hour long. And I was like, I got to listen to it again. I like stuff that's different. And I like stuff that's out of, not just the normal, it's thinking differently. And then I did listen to it again. And then at some point either saw y'all speak or just got in touch with you and got some books and was reading, and you were kind enough to walk me through it. And started with my policy, and my son and son-in-law and daughter, they both have policies. I've got policies on 5 grandkids. And
you know, I wasn't sure this morning. You know, I was just trying to look at your original policy to find the date of issue, kind of thing, and that was 2012, right?
Right.
And I don't even know how many policies you have,
right?
You know, or
like I said, so. I've got mine, and I've got 5 grandkids from age 6 to 4 months. We just got Truett's set up. So
you're legitimately doing the even distribution of age classes that Nelson speaks about in this first book, or writes about, in Becoming Your Own Banker, page 71, I believe.
Wow.
Because he used to say every time grandbaby's born, there's 4 policies fired up, you know, or 2, I'm sorry. Him and Mary purchased one on their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, right. And then the parents would purchase them, and then really both sets of the grandparents. So a lot of policies were.
Right.
And so you're doing that, and I'm very appreciative of that. Because we can talk about it all day long, you know, and it's all conversation until somebody writes a check. And you've written a lot of checks over the years. But, you know, and if I want to go, if I go back to, you know, Jackie Lang, Eb's a, he's a former board certified general surgeon. And he interned under DeBakey, Ben Taub Hospital in Houston. Okay. Great guy. He became a client, and he was a big real estate investor and still is. And then he was a client for maybe a couple of years, and he kept referring people, and he's like, oh, I want to become an agent. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So he became an agent. And excuse me. That was my connection to Jackie Lang and her real estate group was Eberhard. And we did a couple of phone recordings. Excuse me. And we did a presentation, I think, in Las Vegas or somewhere. And so that was my memory of the background. And then, too, I remember driving out to West Texas, meeting a client or something, and I had a phone call with you. Okay. And that was one of my first memories of us talking. And you know, it's a great joy to experience when the light bulb comes on with people, and then they get past the word life insurance, and they get past, you know, all of the conventional, you know, financial advice and activities, and see beyond that and what can be done with this.
And, well, I like your style. I like the talks that you've given. I'm fortunate enough to see you and Nelson Nash several times. And, you know, to some of the things, one thing you told me that I've talked to, you know, sitting around the fire station table, just talking about talking about IRAs and the government sponsored plans and all, why don't they just cut my taxes? If they want to let me, just cut my taxes. Just don't tax me everything. The whole tax deal is just gutting me.
I left that out. He's a retired fireman. So can I tell him where?
Yeah, how about I do it? I worked with Dallas Fire Department for 37 plus years, retired in May of this year.
Well, thank you and congratulations. Are you busier now than ever?
I am. like I said, it's been, 5 months almost? Yeah, 5 months. And had a fifth grandbaby and a busy summer.
That puts a whole new perspective on life, doesn't it?
It does, for sure.
You start
Man,
showing
you
up.
Watch them and they are just, it's so fun to, I don't think I paid enough attention when my kids were little.
Yeah.
It was working.
Yeah.
But it's fun to have the time to sit back and just be calm and not in the rush of, and just watch them and to see how eager they are to learn and growing up doing stuff. So.
You know, when you were still working, I know you got a lot of pushback, you know, potentially from the firehouse or the people you're sharing with. But you did put together a group and I spoke in front of a room full of firemen.
I did.
And,
I had made an attempt to, like I said, Dallas Fire and Police Pension went through a bit of a crisis, over the last, 10 years for sure. But it started long before that. And, I had put together a little training at the association hall, and I still have on my, in fact, I looked it up recently or just came across it. And, the headline of the deal that I sent out to all the fire stations were, "Are you worried yet?" And, it talked about the pension deal, and we set up a thing for you to talk to. And it was, I'm not a big event promoter.
Yeah.
But I did try to get the word out there, and I had a good response from the people that did attend. I have no idea if anybody ever came a client, but I appreciate you spreading the word.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity.
There's two questions I guess everybody has when they introduce to this concept and they come to an understanding of it. I'm not gonna say I understand it completely, but I think I have a pretty good understanding of it. One, I mean, like I said earlier, it sounds too good to be true. It turns out for me, it wasn't. One of those rare exceptions to the rules. And two, why didn't I know this 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago? Because can you imagine?
You know, it's because we haven't met. I was looking for you 20 years ago.
Okay, I wish you'd have met me. can you imagine what 10 years difference would make?
Right.
Because I started, with my policy, what was that, 8 years ago? I was 57 when I started my policy. What a difference it would have made if I had been 47. I mean, 37. I might not have been able to do it at 27, but, you know.
Right.
I could have done it on a smaller scale, I guess.
Oh, I think we can all do more than what we think we can. And you have to start where you're at, right?
Yeah. And you've got to decide what's important to you and then behave accordingly.
I love that, behave accordingly. Right. Well, looking back, what would you have done different? Knowing what you know now, right? What would you have done different?
Oh, gosh. If I knew then what I know now, I would have put every dollar I could into a policy for somebody, you know, kids, wife, me, somebody. You know, the conventional wisdom tells you to put your money in the stock market. Let it grow.
Yeah.
How'd that work out last month? You know, I mean, and particularly people who are just retiring or whatever, or living off their money they've accumulated, the value of their stock holdings, a lot of it had to disappear last month. And that's horrible.
Terrible.
It is horrible. I mean, and now looking back at it, why would anyone do that? Why would you do that? Because, you know, the value of my life insurance policies increased every day.
This is Saturday. The markets are closed. Yeah. The banks are closed. They'll be closed tomorrow, but your cash value is going to go up.
Yeah. on each one of my policies. So my question to myself is, why wouldn't you do that? So if I'd have known then what I know now, I would have never said the word stock market together and would have never put any money in there. Because, I think it turns out I'm a horrible stock market investor. I should probably open a service that says, look, if you pay me money, I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking about buying. You can buy it and short it. It's almost guaranteed to go down if I buy it.
You know what the average day trader earns on an annual basis?
I have no idea.
It's negative.
Yeah.
Think about that.
And the other part of that business could be, I'm thinking about selling. So you can buy this because it's guaranteed to go up when I sell.
The contrarian newsletter, what not to do, huh?
Yeah, exactly. That may be a good business. I don't know.
That reminds me, you met Paul Cleveland, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Someone pointed this out to me. He's been a guest a couple of times. And a couple of months ago, a young man said, James, did you catch what Paul Cleveland said? And I'm thinking, boy, I think I did. I was sitting there talking to him, He said, when you ask him what would you have done different, he said, I would have bought more policies and figured out how to pay for them. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't catch that. Thanks for pointing it out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would have done. I recently had the opportunity, since we're at home, in this home confinement kind of thing, cleaning out old stuff out of our attic, and I came across things that I'd had accumulated over 25 years of working, and some of those were at some point in my career we had to start filing financial statements with the state, and I looked at those and I said, gosh, I own that. I did that with, bought this stock, bought this, that fund, whatever. And, from year to year, it was never really consistent. So I didn't hold things very long, apparently. I wasn't a buy and hold type of guy. So I'm thinking, if I just put that money in a policy, I'd still have it.
Well, did you do any calculations if you'd have held that, what it would have done?
Every night I think about doing that, but then I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, what else? What else have you done with your policy?
Another recent acquisition was we thought about buying windows for our house, putting new windows in, and then when we found out how much that was going to cost, we said, well, what else do we need to do, or would we like to do instead? So we came up with four projects at our house. We put wood flooring down in our hallways that we didn't do when we bought the house for some reason. We put a new French door in, replaced the old French door with a new French door, and redid the deck outside that needed to be done, and remodeled our master shower. And so I borrowed money for that from the policy to finance those things. And in the middle of all that, my gate opener in my driveway quit working. So I had to buy a new gate opener. Well, I had that money sitting around, but back into the PUA it went, and I borrowed that money, and I'm paying it back.
Well, why wasn't it in the PUA already?
It's slowly accumulating. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but... my loans with the insurance company, I put in two categories: long term, and short term. I paid off the mortgage balance of our house a year and a half ago with part of our cash value, because I got tired of dealing with the bank and them having an ever-growing interest in my house as the balance went down. They still had an interest in the entire house, not just...
Yeah, think that one through.
Yeah, so I went ahead and pulled the trigger on that and borrowed the money and paid off the mortgage balance. And so that's a long-term loan to the insurance company. I've added the money that we did to make these remodeling things to that. I consider that as a long-term loan as well.
Okay.
So I've increased my loan payments to the company to cover that, but you know, to account for that. But the things like the gate opener, the air conditioning heating unit, those are short term. So I've got a, in my mind, I'm going to pay them back over a year or two. And so that's how I work it. And it works out for me.
Couple of years and my continuing learning in that arena, that I'm not saying that I don't trust anything, but I think it's responsible to have a portion of hard metals as, again, just like infinite banking is one, it's a great hedge against inflation. Hard money, hard metals, another hedge against inflation. I'm not looking to make money off of, you know, the gold and silver and platinum and palladium, but at least I'm not losing money from the day that that a dollar touches my hand. So, but I say that to go back to when I have a dollar, I don't see it for just a dollar, because I can go out and leverage that money for, like, going back to real estate, that dollar is really worth $5 to me, because I can, on an 80% loan to value, 20% down, that dollar is really five, because I can go and leverage the other four. So it's up to me to never let that $1 go on a one-time use. My goal is to wear the out of that dollar.
And that's just on the leverage.
That's just on the leverage. I mean, right? So then we go into infinite banking, and one of my first policies, not with you, but I know you've reviewed, and I haven't looked at the conversion rate on my, I'm not gonna say their name, but my new policy, and this is me being anal, and the way my dumb little fourth grade brain works is, I know that
we hadn't gotten to his background yet, which is expansive. So,
yeah. So I see a dollar, you know, because I pay attention to my PUA writer letters of what, like, if I make $1,000 PUA premium, that actually turns into almost a $5,000 death benefit today. Mm-hmm. Right. So right there, there's my 80-20 principle. That $1 is actually $5. That's today. That's before dividends are paid continuously from now until age 120 or 121 or whatever it is in the illustration. So that dollar is never a dollar. Even like right now, like my nieces, that's $5 for my nieces. So now that, you know, so if I know that, again, and being responsible and being an honest banker, that money needs to go there first before I go and deploy that same money in a second arena to where I can, I want to squeeze every ounce of energy out of every single dollar that comes across my table or in my wallet.
Are you sacrificing your lifestyle to do all that?
No. Actually, it's... This is what I think you told me not to share before we went on. So
no, wait. We were talking before the mics came on, yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting blown away because it's all very, very cool, and you need to hear it. And I'm like, wait.
No, well
mine, I wanted him to save it for you.
No, well, mine is, you know, it comes back to I need I'm an operator of my bank, right? I'm the vice president. I'm the president. I'm the loan officer. I'm the underwriter, because I get to choose what's important for me and what venture that my next adventure.
let me interject here. Don't jump over that. That's very powerful. So you're the bank owner, right? And your bank, you listening, your bank pays dividends, right? They just don't pay them to you because you're not the bank owner.
Correct.
Right. And then the bank owner gets the dividends, right? And then you're also the loan officer. Right, so you're the gatekeeper of the bank's money,
mm-hmm.
Right? And then, wait, you're the borrower too. Mm-hmm. So there's more than just those positions in this idea, in this concept. It's very powerful, right? Because, and Nelson talked about it many times, that if you look at the capitalization of a bank, a brick and mortar bank, and you look at their balance sheet over 30 years, and then you capitalize a life insurance policy and look at that, the result over 30 years, and the difference in the dividend and the quote unquote interest in the cash values, right, that accrues to you, the policy owner, is really what was a profit to the bank if you didn't practice the infinite banking concept. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, thanks for letting me interject that. You're the bank owner, and you're the lender, and you're the borrower.
It's my house.
I love that.
And my rules.
here I am in the financial services world for 20 plus years, and I had never even heard that term until about a year ago when I started accidentally finding it on my own. And, you know, once I read Nelson Nash's book three or four times, I started to get the concepts and still don't have them all, but it's an eye opener. It's an eye opener for controlling your own money and your own process. And the various phrases he says throughout there, it's kind of, each time you read the book, there's a couple more phrases that you'd say, wow, light bulb, you know? And so it was something where I really enjoyed it because I really wanted to, you know, become my own banker. And that meant I had to get serious about learning more and more about it. And and that's when we spoke, but, and then you helped educate me on some of those details, and we're excited. And so we've begun implementing this process this past year. So
you're swimming upstream, right? And going against the grain, going against the norm.
Yeah.
You know, breaking
well,
the
I think if you're,
construct.
Yeah. If you say this phrase to anybody, they're going to not know what you're talking about.
Right. No, if you think about that, with your background in the financial world and Allison's background as a CPA, and you never heard the phrase becoming your own banker until about a year ago. I mean, does Wall Street not know about this? Do the mutual fund companies not know about this? Does the commercial banks, do they not know about this? All right. Do the life insurance companies not know about this?
The banks know about it, right? Because what's that phrase? Bully? Bank-owned life insurance?
Absolutely.
The bank executives know about it because if you look at their balance sheets, maybe the largest part of their balance sheets, and I don't know this for a fact, I'm speculating, but I had read and seen and heard and so forth. Banks themselves buy life insurance, but they don't teach their employees about this. I don't know of any business schools out there that teach this to their students. You're certainly not going to learn it in middle school, high school. You're not going to learn it at university level. You'll learn it when you start trying to dig into these things, and you'll only learn it if you kind of stumble upon it, because I don't think I'm going to a gathering of my friends and I'm probably not bringing this up. Right. I might.
Yeah, you'll learn it if they ask you about it, maybe, right? But it is a pretty awkward sometimes topic to initiate, you know, with your friends and family, and because nobody wants to be the odd man out. You know, you don't want to be the only guy in the room talking about something that no one knows about, and everybody already knows, or they've heard all their life that life insurance is the world's worst place to put money. So they come from a preconceived idea, right, of life insurance. So it's a difficult, awkward conversation to have. I mean, unless you're just trying to trigger people, then it can be amusing bringing it up.
Right. There's several obstacles to overcome with becoming your own banker. And one is, what does that even mean? So there's explaining that. There's explaining, well, what vehicle should I use to become my own banker? Should I use a savings account or a checking account or a mutual fund or gold, or what should I use? So then there's life insurance. Well, okay, I've heard of life insurance. A lot of people think, you know, buy term life insurance. It's the cheapest and it's the best thing for me. You're not taught that when you hear whole life insurance, you're taught to, it's got a connotation with it. Turn away from that. It's expensive. It's a ripoff due to certain people saying that all the time. So it's beat into your head in the sort of common lexicon. So when I say you have to learn about becoming your own banker, you have to learn what type of vehicle you'll want to utilize to become your own banker, because you can become your own banker, I guess, with a checking account if you really want to. It's not the most efficient thing to do. You can become it with a mutual fund. It's not the best or ideal thing to do. But whole life insurance structured for this whole thing, as you say, and I might steal a couple phrases you said, but that's what you have to know. I mean, you have to know high cash value life insurance that pays dividends and interest. that's what you'll want to use for these things. And once you realize that you can borrow from yourself and utilize this whole life policy as your primary vehicle, that comes with a death benefit, which is a major part, but then you kind of put it out of your mind as you start thinking of how to use this thing on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.